Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to our first edition of Bitter Radio, brought to you on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Today we will be featuring an interview with Luminosity, a well-known bitter slash video artist in the FanVid community. The track you are now listening to is called Aloha Mora. It is a remix track done using dialogue and sounds from the Harry Potter movies. We will start the show when the song ends. This particular track was created by an artist known as Pogo. You can find similar remix work at his MySpace page at myspace.com/pogotracks. Please enjoy the rest of this music before we start the show. Thank you.
472 second place. Not a year. Second. 472 second place. Not a year. Second. 472 second place. Not a year. Second. 472 second place. Not a year. Second.
Welcome to the show. So our guest is already here. Let me just turn on her microphone. Hello?
Hi.
Hi. She's here. This is Luminosity. But before you start, let me just give you a proper introduction like all the professional talk hosts do on a show like this, just to introduce you to the people who are going to be listening to this show. So, for those of you who don't know, Luminosity is a prominent Spanish video editor and recut artist. Her work recuts and recontextualizes film and television as music videos with varied and complex messages and readings. Luminosity's work has gained notoriety for its artistic expression and its critical thinking. New York Magazine interviewed her about Spanish media production recently, and her hilarious virtuoso send-up of 300 to Madonna's Vogue was chosen as one of the top 20 intentionally funny videos of 2007. Her well-received Scooby Road was the first album-length concept vid, underscoring the television series Buffy the Vampire Slayer with the Beatles' Abbey Road. Luminosity has been active in Spanish fitting community for nearly a decade. When she is not fitting, she mentors new fitters and is on the staff of VividCon, the annual vidding convention held each August in the U.S. Welcome.
Well, hi. I wasn't expecting the applause, but yay.
Well, yeah, you definitely deserve it. Like, you know, we have a virtual audience here of people who are great fans of yours, and I just wanted to make you feel at home and appreciated and everything.
Well, thank you. A laugh track and all 12 of my best friends. I'm thrilled.
So thank you for being on the show, and I guess we can start out with something that should be pretty simple, which is like a basic definition of what vidding is for people who don't know anything about it, even though our listeners are probably people who are very, very familiar with it.
Well, fitting, the easy description, the quickest one, is it's a fan-made, vids are fan-made music videos. We vidders take scenes from our favorite TV shows and movies, and we pair them up with particular pieces of music or audio, and we impose our arguments or our observations about the shows and movies we like. Pretty much the basic bottom line of vidding is we want to convey something that we feel about the show, something that we are deeply emotional about maybe, or something that we really want to make an argument for. So the best and fastest way to describe vidding is just music videos that we edit ourselves.
Great, thank you. How did you get involved in vidding?
I saw my first vid in 1995 or 96. I can still remember what it was. It was Sympathy for the Devil by the Central Consortium. It was a Highlander vid. And I saw it, and while I was watching it, I knew I could do that. And then I started trying to find vids everywhere. And at that point, they were only privately shared. And you had to sort of get your hands on a videotape. And I started collecting them. And I waited about 4 years before I actually started vidding. It was at the end of 2000, I hit critical mass and went out and got the hardware and software that I needed to begin. And I was really fortunate that two highly talented vidders, Killa and Carol S., held my hand, helped me set up my hardware and software. And the first couple of vids I did, they were right there with me. And I kind of fell into it so easily. It was an immediate love at first sight for me. So, and I've been vidding pretty much nonstop ever since December of 2000. I try to keep my editing program open every day, and I'm very prolific. But I got into vidding just because I saw it and wanted to do it, and I guess that's how most of us do it.
Yeah, I get the sense that there's an addictive quality to it. And I also got in your answer that there's also a community aspect to it.
Right, right. The vidders that I knew personally were fans of Highlander and X-Files at the beginning. Killa was mostly a Highlander vidder and Star Trek, and Carol was making X-Files vids, and I knew them, and I knew other fans from Highlander, and at that point, it was a very close-knit, I believe, and we all pretty much knew each other, and we did it for each other. So now it's sort of spread out, and we're vidding. I still vid for just a couple of people, but everybody sees them now.
Yes. I just want to remind people who are listening who are actually in the U.S., that if you want to call in, you can also call in and ask questions yourself. We're basically going to free flow and have, you know, a series of bidding related questions and just chat. And Luminosity and I have talked before, and so there's it's easy for us, I think, to come up with things to talk about. But if you want to call and participate, you can. Our number is 646-595-4533. And I also would like to let you know that as calm as I sound, it's like unreal to me that I'm hosting a radio show and that I'm being as calm as I seem to be. So I wanted to ask you about, let's see, how you came up with the name Luminosity. I think it's pretty cool that with this whole, you know, vidding phenomenon, that everyone has different names and aliases. And I figure there must be some interesting story behind the names that we come up with. What's yours?
Well, I've been Luminosity for almost 20 years, ever since I've been online. And we talked about this earlier. I was on the news groups, the internet news groups. I was on one called Alt Mindless Chatter, and it was a humorous group of people, a lot of wordplay, puns, and everyone there had many aliases, and I chose Luminosity DeVille, sort of tongue-in-cheek, to be the world's greatest authority. I was the light of the city, but I've just sort of dropped the DeVille and kept Luminosity. And I love that it when I describe it and I say luminosity, light, like in physics. And but I think it really applies to vidding. I like to work with light. We vid with light, and I think it's really appropriate. And I don't ever, I don't ever intend to change it. But I've seen a couple of other luminosities in vidding, and I wish them the best.
Yes. Something else that you're involved in your participation in the whole vidding community is something called VividCon, and I think this is a good introductory, a good time for an introductory explanation of what VividCon is, because I have a sense like people get together and they look at vids, but maybe you can shed some more light on what goes on and what it signifies.
Sure. VividCon is pretty much the highlight of my vidish year, my fanish year. VividCon is a vidding convention that is held every year in August in Chicago. It's intended for anyone who enjoys fanish vids, making them, watching them, talking about them. It's not just for vidders. It's for people who enjoy vids in any way. And as the interest in vidding has grown, we have been other cons like Escapade and Media West and ZebraCon and many others that I can't even think of right now have been accommodating vidders and presenting shows. So in 2002, Shalott, I believe, Astolot, had decided that we needed a vidding convention. So our first vidding convention was in 2002. And what we do there is we have a dedicated vid showroom, one track that is nothing but vids from Friday through Sunday, and another track that is panels, tech panels and philosophy panels, meta. We talk about Spanish vidding. We talk about how our exposure, vidders' exposure, has been growing and growing. And I have to say, having attended many cons in the past, VividCon is my favorite con, and I won't miss it. I may miss one other con or two other cons, but I won't miss VividCon. We also have a Club Vivid. On Friday night of the convention, we have a mixer where we show vids for about 3 hours. People now are making vids specifically for this mixer dance. And it's very laid back, but always the trains are always on time on VividCon. So, but it's a social, a big social event for us vidders, and I love it. And I don't know of anyone who's gone to VividCon who hasn't had a pretty good or a very good experience there. And this year, VividCon is August 14th through 16th in Chicago. So.
Is it always in the same location, or does that change?
Well, it hasn't changed yet. This is our eighth convention, and it's still up in north of the city, close to O'Hare. And we've been growing as a convention. Our membership has grown and grown. But still, the hotel we've chosen has still been able to accommodate us. So we're still there.
Okay, excellent. And I'm sure there's links to where people can find out information on that. I can actually say, like a regular radio host, that this is something that I can put in our show notes after the show is over. So if people wanted to find more information, they could go to the site and get that information.
Well, it's really easy. VividCon.com.
Excellent.
It's easy. You have information about the convention, registration, and policies, a fact. We also have a live journal community and a Yahoo Groups mailing list as well. So, and it's open for anyone to join. And I guess I should say, too, that the policy of VividCon, we're pretty much equal opportunity. We don't judge or discriminate against any sorts of vids, even if we think they're badly made or in bad taste. We are pretty much equal opportunity. So we do open it to everyone, and VividCon sells out really fast every year, too, and it's an exciting place, and I enjoy it a lot. I've never had a bad experience at VividCon.
That's great. That's great. I mean, in terms of like community, that's one place that people can get together and everything. It's almost sounded, I think, at least to me, it sounds kind of nostalgic going back to the VCR days when you actually went out and met with people in their homes and you worked on it and you mentored with other people. Do you find like there's a difference in community now, that there's a difference in technology, where now anyone with a computer can, you know, and video editing equipment can basically almost in some cases go it alone in terms of their, or is there some kind of like still community aspect of mentoring that goes on, but it's just a different form online?
Well, I think that the community, as Web 2.0 has evolved and gotten larger and larger, and the availability of vidding software has become more available. There have been, you know, like Windows packages, Windows Movie Maker, and I believe Mac packages iMovie, really basic nonlinear editing programs, so that a person running their own, you know, OS will have a vidding editing program packaged with it. So as people have discovered that, I think vidding has exploded. We talked about this earlier, that when I started vidding 8 years ago, which, you know, is decades in cyber time, but when I started vidding, I felt that the vidding community was very close-knit, very tightly knit, and now it's everywhere. And before, when we did feel that it was very tightly knit, we would come across people who were vidding outside of that group, and we called them feral vidders. It wasn't meant in any derogatory term. It just meant that they were not part of that social group. But now there is vidding now with YouTube and iMeme and Vimeo and Vidler, all those sites that actually support user-generated content. Vidding is just an explosive art form now, and there's just no way that you can corral it all in and say you know everybody or you're aware of all the vidders that are out there. So I believe that it's everywhere now. And although they're mentoring, I am not the only person who does this. I was mentored. Carol S. and Killa mentored me, and ever since then, ever since I felt that I had a grasp on the tech and on the idea of what vidding was, I've tried to find someone that I thought was promising and someone that I felt that I could have a certain rapport with. I pulled them in and tried to open doors, but they do work that is beautiful or technically brilliant or just proficient, or they have potential. I want them to see that there is a supportive community out there. So I reach out to those people. Usually one or two a year I try to pull in and tell them everything I know, you know, everything I could think of that I know. And, of course, I get something out of that. It's not that I'm the most altruistic person on earth. I'm not. I always learn from the people that I mentor.
Yeah.
I enjoy it, you know, because that gives me free rein to go on and on, like right now, about vidding to one person, my captive audience.
There's something, I've created like my own little vidder community, and the thing that I've seen that has come across pretty clear is that most vidders are women, And also, there seems to be, I don't know if this is the case, or at least it, maybe it just happened with my particular group, but it seemed to be like there's a core demographic of either teenagers or mothers. Have you seen anything like that, or in terms of?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, whenever I bring it up, you know, when we talk about the demographics of bidding, most men are surprised when I tell them that most bidders are women. But when you look back historically, film editing in the past was historically a female job. It was kind of like grunt work, you know, the male director would make the movie and he would hand it off to a female editor, telling her where to cut it. So it's interesting that sort of hands-on, the handling of the film and of the bidding was women. And as far as ages, I believe that bidding, and I could be wrong, but the vanish bidding, the type of bidding that I am involved with, started with a bidder named Candy Fong in 1975. That doesn't mean that people didn't do it before we did, but we were sort of a self-conscious, self-aware group of women, of fans, who Candy got a hold of cutting room floor film and made a slideshow in 1975. So she was, I don't know how old Candy is now, and I won't embarrass her by even guessing, but she was a young woman back then, and now that bidding, because it's such an emotional sort of activity, I think that women are more easily drawn to it. There are other types of bids, like political remixes and sports remixes, and I've been over lurking and browsing through those videos, and they're predominantly male. But this sort of emotional argument, lyrical, artistic effort is primarily female, and I don't really see that changing. On the other hand, interestingly, anime bidding, which is much more, there's a call for more technical technique, I believe is more male-oriented. And I think that's an interesting, just something to note, that more men bid anime and women bid film.
Yeah. I think also it's been the case that bids having to do with superheroes have also, or at least I've gotten the sense, I'm not sure myself, but like superheroes such as Superman or the Hulk or Wolverine, a lot of the comic book type vids are also mostly a male type demographic.
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to say. I want to put it in 25 words or less. At its core, the vidding, the Spanish vidding that we do, is women talking back to the male creator.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you should say that most superhero stuff is male. But for one thing, if you look at movies in the past, say, 6 years, the biggest movies of maybe the past decade have been superhero movies. You know, from The Matrix and Batman and Superman and Star Wars, now Star Trek, which I won't say superhero, but it is genre, it's fantasy. And that almost guarantees that it will be visually interesting.
Yeah.
So, and there are other bidders. One of my bidding friends, Laura Shapiro, did a brilliant vid to West Wing called Circles. And, you know, West Wing is all about in the White House. It wasn't time machines and superheroes, but it takes, I think, a certain eye to vid that sort of show or movie and to make the argument using something besides, you know, things blowing up. You know, things explode. And that's why I think that genre and fantasy is so popular, because it is visually interesting.
Yeah. Going back to what you said earlier about directors handing off their work to women editors to sort of like, I remember seeing a documentary called The Cutting Edge, and I think you can find it on YouTube, and it completely supports what you're saying. In particular, there were interviews with Steven Spielberg and with Quentin Tarantino, and they talked about their working with female editors. I think also Martin Scorsese has had, I forgot her name, but it's Thelma something or other. She is, she's like been his editor like from the very beginning. And Quentin Tarantino's, for his movie Kill Bill, specifically wanted a female editor. And I wanted to ask you, like, do you think there's any kind of crossover between, let's say, someone who starts out vidding and then maybe going into movies and becoming a film editor?
I think that it can happen. I know several vidders who are in college and majoring in film and film production. That obviously, I am older than I sound, so that wasn't my goal. My goal was to, you know, create art the way I'm doing. But I do believe that there can be a crossing over from amateur vidding or vidding for the love of it to using video editing as a way to make a living. I think vidders could probably use their vids on their reel, you know, to show what they're capable of doing. So I think there is there's a possibility, of course. As you and I are talking, I've just been mentally doing a roll call, and off the top of my head, I can think of about 10 women I know who are actually in video or editing, video editing or film production, and at least a couple of male vidders that I know are professional video editors as well, and they make fan vids out of the love of it, just like I do.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I know you were asking about the directors, and I had actually answered this question for New York Magazine. The interviewer asked me who my favorite directors were, and my favorite, I listed off, you know, the film noir directors of the 50s, like, you know, like Orson Welles or Jacques Tourneur. But what I really paid attention to and still pay attention to are the cinematographers and the editors. When a person starts vidding and becomes obsessed with it, like I am, she pays attention to how films are structured and how TV shows are structured. And there's a wonderful way to do that, too, is to watch a show without the sound on and just watch the way the editor cuts a scene in order to elicit an emotional response. And I think that's where, going back to, and I don't want to sound like I'm being, you know, saying that women can only women can do this, but right. I do think we have an emotional connection to what we vid. I do. I don't want to vid anything that I don't like. So
yeah.
That's why I don't vid to order. I vid what I love.
Right.
And I do have that emotional connection to it. So I'll just the other day I'm in the middle of making a vid, and to use an example, I was I'm vidding something for the TV show Supernatural, and I was looking at the last episode of the season, which was high tension, very emotional, you know the big ending of season 4, and at one point at the climax of the episode, right before the end, Sam, one of the leads, he is about to do something really big, and I was watching the way it was cut, and it was cut with two images, a middle shot and a close-up, a middle shot and a close-up, and it went back and forth, maybe 6 or 7 times. But when you're watching that on TV, you're not conscious of it, but what that editor has done, he has made you tense because he's doing these sharp, quick cuts back and forth, and you are disturbed. And I was, you know, looking at that going, well, yeah, that's how I do it too. You know, I do those sharp, quick cuts, and it's sort of the dynamism of it puts the viewer on edge, and it helps, it makes a bit exciting, you know, paying attention to how editors work and try to copy those things. I copy them, and then I try to do something else with them. About a month or two ago, I made a vid about Night of the Hunter, which is an old film noir. They call it a film noir, but it's like a surreal fantasy to me. But I noticed how the director and the cinematographer and film editor worked to ratchet the tension up when I was watching the movie, and it was something that I tried to distill and use in the vid, and I think it was very successful. It's not a popular vid because, you know, that's fine. It was just something I had to do. But it was fun to try to utilize those styles and use it in my vid as well. So I think it there's a big payoff in paying attention to the way a film is cut and examining one's own reaction to it.
Getting more to your own video work, and I think you mentioned this particularly with Vogue when we talked earlier. You said that your success that you had with your videos was something in which you were, I think you used the phrase, prepared to fail. Could you explain what that means?
I'm always prepared to fail. I've made a joke in the past about my own work that I want to either succeed spectacularly or fail spectacularly. And when I make a vid, any vid, but it was it became very clear to me with Vogue, I'm always sort of prepared for no one to like it. And I was wholly unprepared for what happened with Vogue. I think I'm a little better prepared now if that should ever happen again. But when Dr. Jenkins and then New York, Dr. Jenkins at MIT and New York Magazine interviewed me, I had no idea that Vogue was anything special. I mean, it was just, for me, it was just the vid I made for Club Vivid, for VividCon. That was what it was. And I was mocking Frank Miller, but at the same time, I was trying to pull back the 2D comic panel look of 300 before it was a movie, and I didn't think anything of it. It was just the next vid in what I was doing, and when I say I'm prepared to fail, what I mean is, and I think most vidders are like this, if we fail badly enough, we will learn something invaluable. And I wasn't prepared for the success, but the success taught me something as well. It taught me that I wasn't ready. But even now, you know, I get comments on Vogue, and I usually end up telling people, well, I'm better now. It's 2 years old. I'm better now. So, yeah, I was prepared to fail. I was prepared. I'm still prepared to fail. I don't ever want to fail, but I'd like to think I'm prepared.
This is a topic that I think some will be very curious about, but what has been your evolution in terms of vidding software?
Oh, yeah. When I started, the beginning, things no one ever saw, I tried to vid with two VCRs, and I tried for about 4 months. And I didn't have the right kind of VCR to vid with, where I could count off time, or you know how you look on an old VCR and it'll count off the seconds or the length of the tape.
Yeah.
And I had two VCRs that it was a struggle just to connect them to each other, much less, you know, try to move tape around. And those women who vidded on VCRs have my undying admiration. Let me just say that. The patience involved in that is just extraordinary. But when I got the software, I had Windows 2000 was what I started with, and I bought a Pinnacle DC30 capture card. And it came bundled with Premiere.
Wow.
And I, you know, talk about not user-friendly software. I'm going to say Premiere. I think any editing software has a very steep learning curve. But I've stayed with Premiere as far as an editing program. I've tried Avid in the past.
Yeah.
And it was too much for me at that time. It might not be too much for me now, but it was at that time. And anyway, I moved up as Pinnacle, as Pinnacle's hardware became more sophisticated, and as I blew up computers, which I did, I would upgrade. And speaking of fans in our fanish community, the first time I had to upgrade, a group of fans got together behind my back and bought it for me. And that's the joy of a fanish society. But I was working as in capturing, which doesn't really have lossless, as it digitizes the film, it's not lossless. And, of course, you know, everything is what you see is what you get, and garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
And other editors were working strictly with software, with programs like DVD Decryptor or the DivX software. And I think about 2.5 years ago, I segued from the capture card to working with only software. And then an anime editor, Absolute Destiny, was very patient with me, and he taught me how to vid using AviSense scripts. And that's what I do now. I rip DVDs. Using DVD Decryptor, and I index them using DG Index, and then I start writing scripts. And Premiere, which AviSynth and Premiere are not married. They don't like each other, but I work with that now, strictly with scripts and software. And that's where I am now. I've been doing AviSynth for a little over 2 years, I think. I actually did I did Vogue on AviSynth and women's work as well. So.
Wow. Well, it looks like we have someone calling in. Let me take this call and see what they'd like to say. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Theater Radio. Yes, you're on.
Hi, I just want to say congratulations to you and Luminosity both for your first program here. I think it's so awesome that I get to talk to these people and to you. So my question for Luminosity is what she thinks about the OTW and the future of vidding, kind of in general or with the legal aspect and just kind of everything.
Oh, hi, and who are you? Do I need to know?
Oh. I'm sorry, my name is R.D. Phantom.
Okay. Thank you for calling. The OTW, I'm a member of the Organization for Transformative Works, and it's run for fans, by fans. It's I think everyone in the OTW is active in fandom. And what the OTW does, it's where we try to archive and save fan-created work. We try to offer legal opinions and options to people who may not be able to. I'm stumbling over it. The OTW, it protects. It's trying to be an umbrella organization to protect fan work. And I'm going to say that their vision is that fanish work should be recognized as legal, for one thing, and transformative for another thing, and we want it to be accepted as a legitimate creative activity. I think what I've seen from the OTW, they've been very helpful to me when I was facing my first interview. I didn't want to miss anything or you know, like, missed the history of bidding, want to make sure I knew. But I believe that the proactive stance of the OTW is a very positive thing for bidders. When I started bidding, there was an argument about whether or not bidding was even art. But now with the OTW, it's a preservation of Spanish economy. It's a protection from being exploited by commercial interests, and it's a protection and defense against legal challenges. And I think that the longer the OTW is out there, and the more widely known it becomes, the more effective it's going to be in protecting us. I think all fan works, I agree with the OTW that all fan works are transformative, and because I believe that, ergo, they are legitimate. And so the OTW is trying to keep the history in one place for another thing. And I know there's something that Francesca Coppa says. She's one of the women in the OTW, is that as a Spanish bidding community, and I'm speaking about the whole community, we don't want to lose our identity in the morass of bids that are out there. And I believe that the longer the OTW is up and running and the more well-known it becomes, the easier, or at least the more legitimate it's going to be. I think it's legitimate as it is, but as a matter of fact, they stood with the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, earlier this year in trying to change copyright law to protect us, because at this point, we have to, people are getting their vids taken down from YouTube, for example, or like my experience having vids removed from iMeme. And the my defense was that what I did was transformative, thereby it was covered as legal under copyright law. So I'm real happy with the OTW, and I wish them the best on their mission, and I'm going to do what I can do to further that mission.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on all of that. I think they're an incredible organization, and I think that the bringing together fans to help preserve our community and all of that is really wonderful. So thank you so much for answering my question.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Well, that brings up a point where let's see. Well, one of the things I'd like to say is that I hope to have some representative from the OTW maybe do a show just with them to talk about what they're up to and the things that are happening. I know this October there's going to be an important ruling on deciding whether or not, you know, transformative works are going to be considered, like, legal and protected. And that's something I'm very much looking forward to. I understand you also had the, I don't know if it would be considered a badge of honor, but just you said, like, just the other day, you just got your account taken down from Vimeo or something like that?
I got tossed from Vimeo yesterday.
Is that your whole account, or is it just like one video? Or?
No, it was everything. I actually put a search in for myself, and I found my icon, but nothing else was at Vimeo. I was tossed for breaking their rules, and one of the reasons I haven't pursued it yet, I may still write them a letter as I did with iMeme back in 2007, it was because I broke their terms of service, and even if the law at this point says that my videos are legal and artwork and transformative and all the things that I think they are, I still broke their terms of service and they could throw me out. And they did. It didn't matter if it was passworded or not. They threw me out. And I won't badmouth them, but I did already. So,
let's see. Just to give a status on where we are with the show. We have about 15 minutes remaining. If anybody else wants to call in, you're welcome to. Again, our call-in number is 646-595-5000. 4533. And you can get to our site, and, you know, I think there's pretty, like, also active activity going on in the chat rooms. And but if you wanted to get to the show page, you just go to blogtalkradio.com/vitterradio. So in the time that we have left, let's see what else we can cover here. Is there anything that you wanted to say or communicate just to anyone who might be listening, who are fans? You know, I can ask you questions, but there may be stuff that you have that you particularly wanted to communicate in a forum like this.
I don't have anything specific. I don't have anything specific to say, but I would want to say, and in a sort of a preemptive defense, that Vitting is my primary creative outlet. I've been an artist all my life, and I was really blocked for a long time, and Vitting helped me overcome that artistic block, and I value it for that. And I would tell anyone who's thinking about Vitting to jump in and do it and try it. There are people who want to help you. There are people who want to be involved with what you do. So I would say, you know, I think the important thing about Vitting is it's a wonderful outlet for a fan. A fanish Vitting is really all I feel that I can speak about with that. But it's a wonderful outlet for a fan, and some great art comes of it. And it's not easy, and for a while there, it wasn't cheap, but
yeah.
It's very rewarding.
Yes, it is. I myself, my own experience with Vitting came from going to MySpace one day and seeing a list of videos regarding the X-Files, and someone had done a video to the Maroon 5 song, She Will Be Loved. And the way they did it, they included the lyrics to match the scenes, and I was just amazed. It was like getting the whole show in a synopsis kind of way, but even more powerful because of the whole aspect of being able to merge the song with the visuals. And having a background of the show, it makes it that much more powerful in the way that the song adds to what you already know about the shows. When you're working with shows and doing Vitting, there's a time aspect that you talk about when you actually have to work on the video and it takes hours and stuff. But I find it amazing to think that people who vid multi-fandom, like, there requires, in some cases, like, a commitment to actually watch these shows and watch multiple shows and then be able to choose clips from multiple seasons.
And I think you're absolutely right. There's a certain we develop an eye, I believe. One of the fifth vid I ever made was an X-Files vid, and it was to They're Not Here, They're Not Coming by Don Henley. And, of course, the entire thing was tongue-in-cheek. But the point I tried to make in that vid was that they're already here, you know. But I think that when you are vidding, a person who's vidding, we have an emotional connection as it is to the show.
Right.
And we start to tease out arguments or character traits or, you know, something about the show that has affected us. And I was just thinking that my own favorite vid of mine, my own personal favorite vid that I've made, besides the one I'm working on, which is always my favorite, but my own long-lived favorite vid is my Farscape vid, Ecstatic Drum Trip, because I wanted to share what it was about Farscape that pulled me in and kept me. And during the building of that vid, I learned about audio editing. I learned about I learned other forms of technical editing, and it ended up being a very successful vid. So I'm going to say that every time I make a vid, every single time I make a vid, I learn something else, something technical or something in how to present an argument or how to present a narrative and or how to twist a narrative, you know. Lots of vids that I see now use outside source, and they make up their own alternate realities within the canon of whatever show they're watching. And I think the longer a person vids, the more open they become to the different styles and the different arguments they can make. I know I made a Supernatural vid, and I used six other movies making my point. So I'm saying that now, you know, in the past that wasn't common at all to use outside source. So, but it is now, and I'd say that's different from using multi-fanish sources. I think it was Media Cannibal's Taxonomy of Hotness, where they took these images from different shows of what we as women notice about the men in the shows or the leads in the shows that we find attractive. And every show has a guy in a bathtub, and every show has a guy pulling his shirt off, and every show has somebody tied up. And they put those together in such a way that it made everybody who looked at that vid, you know, facepalm. Oh, my gosh, that's true. That they all do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's good to point out the obvious as well.
Yeah, yeah. I also love the aspect of vidding when I think it's mostly TV shows that get vidded and movies as well, but sometimes there's the, you know, when the stars align, a TV show becomes a movie, and then it creates the opportunity to tie in the series with the movie, and you have this now global audience who's able to participate in the movie and get involved with the TV show, and then there's this, like, great period of time, and it for me, particularly, it happened with The X-Files when the movie came out last year, that it brought a whole new resurgence of fans who had done vids, were making vids regarding the show, and there's a before, during, and after period.
Right.
You experienced that yourself?
I think the first X-Files vid I made used images and clips from, I think, the first six seasons and the first movie. And I believe that the movie is what piqued my interest to go back and watch X-Files from the beginning. And then I just taped it, you know. I taped everything. It was on five times a day on FX at that time, and I taped everything. So I do believe that there's like Star Trek now. I mean, there's a resurgence in Star Trek fandom that it's amazing to watch. To see Captain Kirk, you know, and to see how successfully J.J. Abrams segued from the original series to this reboot.
Yes. So I'm going to take some time before the show ends just to highlight a couple of things that if you're listening to the show and you're a fan of vidding and you find this topic interesting, that you can do. One of the things is there's a Facebook fan page created specifically for vidding. It's very easy for you to get to. All you need to do is go to tinyurl.com/vidding. I'll include the full address and the links. I know tiny URLs may have some, you know, maybe suspected because of people have been using it for other reasons rather than just linking to regular sites. But I created that as an easy way for you, for anyone to get to it. So it's just tinyurl.com/vidding. It'll forward you directly to the Facebook page, and you can become a fan. And it's really simple. If you're on Facebook already, all you have to do is just click a link. The goal is to get to 1,000 fans, so that we can actually have the domain name facebook.com/vidding. And then it will stand as a place where everyone can get together and collaborate, since Facebook is such a huge community. I'll include links to that in the show notes. Let's see if there's anything else to cover before we go. There's about 4 minutes to go. Is there any final words that you wanted to say? I just want to thank you and acknowledge you for being our first guest. You've been absolutely wonderful. Before the show started, in our conversations, in our email exchanges, and with 4 minutes to go, it's hard to believe that I would even get to the point where I would say there's 4 minutes to go in the show, and that I'm actually broadcasting live. So thank you very much, and I welcome you to come back anytime. If there's, you know, anything that you particularly wanted to promote or share, or come back as, you know, or even call in on another show. So I just really want to thank you so much for being our guest on this first show.
Well, thank you for having me. I said before, I'm extremely flattered. I don't speak for everyone I know, but I do think that vidding is a legitimate, wonderful artistic exercise, and I would encourage people who are listening, or who are listening to the podcast, and if you've not vidded in the past, you know, find somebody. There are people who are willing to help you. And I have enjoyed myself immensely. I was a nervous wreck, as you knew, but I ended up feeling that way, feeling differently now. So anyway, thank you for having me, and I look forward to listening to other shows on your Vidder Radio. I wish you great success.
Thank you very much. Okay, we just have about 2 minutes to go, and before we do, I just want to give a couple of shout-outs to some people who have been supportive in leading up to the show. First, I wanted to thank Scully Dana 2006 from Romania, Jen from Australia, Ballistic from France, B Mania Vids, and Justin from The Vault. You know who you are, and for those of you who know, you know where The Vault is. All my friends at The X-Filing and Big Light, and my soundtrack buddy at soundtrackgeek.com. I would be remiss to not also thank my wife, who basically tolerates all the time I spend on this project that doesn't earn me any money at all. And I want to thank you, for the listeners, for listening, and who have called and participated in the chat rooms. And I look forward to more and more interesting topics around vidding. And if you want to be a guest on this show, feel free to contact me. My live journal name is Vidder Kidder. And thank you again for the show. So I'm going to close out the show with the audio that I started out with. And it may just repeat the beginning intro. And here we go. Take care and have a great weekend.
Hello and welcome to our first edition of Vidder Radio, brought to you on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Today we will be featuring an interview with Luminosity, a well-known Vidder/video artist in the FanVid community. The track you are now listening to is called Aloha Mora. It is a remix track done using dialogue and sounds from the Harry Potter movies. We will start the show when the song ends. This particular track was created by an artist known as Pogo. You can find similar remix work at his MySpace page at myspace.com/ Pogo Tracks. Please enjoy the rest of this music before we start the show. Thank you.
472 second pace, not a year. Second, 472 second pace, not a year. Second, 472 second pace, not a year. Second, 472 second pace, not a year. Second,